That howling chorus you're hearing there is a pack of red wolves, and sadly, it's a sound you soon may not be able to hear in America ever again. There are only 45 to 60 red wolves left in the wild in the United States. Red wolves once ranged the eastern part of the country from Pennsylvania to Florida and as far away as Texas, but now there's only one place where you can hear those howls. On one wildlife refuge in North Carolina. Federal wildlife officials started introducing pairs of red wolves into the refuge 30 years ago. Their numbers climbed at first, but now red wolves are once again close to extinction. The whole episode is viewed by many conservationists as a failure of the Endangered Species Act. With more from North Carolina is Delene Beelen. She's a science and nature writer and author of The Secret World of the Red Wolves. Delene, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you very much.
Delene, it's a sad story. There was an effort, as I said, to reintroduce captive bred wolves into the Alligator River Refuge in North Carolina. Their numbers climbed to over 200, and now they might be below just 45 individuals. What happened?
It's definitely a long story, but I wouldn't qualify it as all sad as you were leading in. I think there's been many successes with this program, despite the recent decline. The red wolves first began dwindling throughout the 1800s and early 1900s to where there was just one last population in the wild in eastern Texas and western Louisiana. And right around the time the Endangered Species Act was passed in 1973, biologists had already turned their attention to saving the last red wolves in the wild. Unfortunately, by the time they really started digging into it, the red wolves were already interbreeding with coyotes in the wild, and Curtis Carley, who was a Fish and Wildlife Service biologist tasked with recovering the red wolves in the wild, realized they couldn't do it in the wild. He had to basically convince his superiors that they were going to have to capture the last wild red wolves, captive breed them, and reintroduce them into the wild later. And I think it's important for us to look at the history of science and understand at this time, nobody was doing that. It seems so commonplace now to say, well, we can captive breed it and reintroduce it. But the red wolf was the very first time that we did this with an animal in the United States of America. And I think that in itself is a huge success that they did this. The recent decline with red wolves, I would qualify as largely a political failure, not a biological one.
Well, the Endangered Species Act is in place to help with situations just like this, to protect threatened species in the United States. You say mostly a political failure, not a biological one. Explain that.
So many people see the Fish and Wildlife Service as sort of this, you know, monolithic agency tasked with recovering and saving and managing wild animals. But there's a lot of different layers to the Fish and Wildlife Service. And what I saw when I was researching and reporting my book, The Secret World of Red Wolves, is that the field team, the field biologists who work on the ground, you know, boots on the ground, trying to save these animals, working with the policy regulations that they have and then their own cunning in many ways, they were so dedicated to saving this animal and doing everything they could to reach the recovery goals that were spelled out in the Red Wolf Recovery Program. And one of those goals was to have three wild populations that numerically had enough to continue 80 to 90% of the red wolf's genes, you know, 150 years into the future. That was their goal. And then there's different management actions that, you know, can carry them to that goal. But the field team was, in many ways, I think, let down by the bureaucratic Southeastern Regional Atlanta Office of the Fish and Wildlife Service. You know, it's divvied up into regions. And at the regional level, I don't feel that the Fish and Wildlife Service field team was adequately supported. And because there was some, I would qualify it as a small but vocal minority of landowners that began agitating against the program, at the regional level, the Fish and Wildlife Service began to take actions that basically prevented the field team from being able to carry out their goal of recovering the red wolf in the wild.
You say landowners. There were landowners in the area who didn't want red wolves on their land or thought they were threatening their property.
Right, yes, within the Red Wolf Recovery Area. And it's also important to note, you know, in the beginning you described red wolves were first reintroduced into Alligator River National Wildlife Refuge. And that's true. It was September of 1987, September 14th, I believe, when four pairs were first released there. But since 1987, over the course of this program, red wolves came to occupy 1.5 million acres over the entire Albemarle Peninsula. It's a five-county area that is now the Red Wolf Recovery Area. And if you look at a map of North Carolina, that peninsula is kind of a finger-like, thumb-like projection of land that juts out into the V of the Outer Banks. So it's not just the refuge that's involved. It's actually a much, much greater area. And the field team, the field biologists, did a wonderful job, I think, of working one-on-one with many different landowners to reach their recovery goals of having red wolves in the wild, and working one-on-one a lot of times with verbal agreements with landowners to manage red wolves on their land. So I think it would be unfair to characterize it as many, many, all these landowners that are upset, because many were working quite well with the Fish and Wildlife Service Agency, the field team, up until just a couple years ago.
Delene, less than 45 individuals now. What's the hope for the future of red wolves?
I think there's still lots of reasons to hope. The Fish and Wildlife Service was supposed to come out with a decision last October as to where the program is going to go from here. They essentially stopped all management actions about 2 years ago, and we've all been waiting to find out what the next steps will be. But I think that one of the legacies of the Red Wolf, there's several firsts that came out of this program in terms of wildlife management techniques. And I hope that the legacy won't end with that, with the contributions that the Red Wolf's management has made to wildlife biology in general. I hope that it will continue, because I think that there's plenty of room for people and red wolves in eastern North Carolina, and probably in other areas in the southeast too.
Delene Beeland, author of The Secret World of Red Wolves. Delene, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.